from the surface of the planet Earth. We're going into Earth orbit with robots. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. He's to introduce us to robots, independent or man-directed. In any event, this is Gasoline Alley in Space. Bob, there's a wonderful illustration accompanying your story of the announcement by Orbital ATK for a mission extension vehicle. What am I looking at? Because it looks scary.
Well, that image that you're looking at, I think at the top of my post, is science fiction's version of what robots servicing in space would be like, drawn in 1979. And what I did is the number of orbital tugs, orbital refueling, orbital robot servicing, junk repair missions that are, and companies that are existing is getting so much that I decided, let me do a summary overview of all the companies that I've run across in the last few years. And this is not all-encompassing. So I wrote an essay, and I topped it with a great picture from 1979 of what they thought robots in space would look like. But then I perceived images from others that are real. And I basically summarized, you know, we've got six different orbital tug companies. These are companies that are building small tugs to move satellites into their preferred orbits after launch. Or maybe to change their orbits after they've worked in one for a while. That's six different companies that are basically providing satellites engine services moving from one point to another. And then you got two different companies that are right now providing repair services in space. One has been around the longest. Northrop Grumman's mission robotic vehicles. These are vehicles that initially they attach to the nozzle of a defunct geosynchronous satellite, and then acted as that satellite's new fuel and power and engine. They've now upgraded it into a system where they launch with three pods that. The main vehicle takes the pods to the satellites, and the pods do the work. They attach by robot arm to the satellites. And they're already in operation. They've already saved a few satellites. And there's another company, OrbitFab, that wants to actually put a gas station in space and have a shuttle tanker, essentially, go from the gas station to the satellite to bring hydrazine fuel to them. And that's two different of those. And then you've got so many companies involved in proposing ways to remove space junk that the Space Force put out a request for bids from companies to get small study contracts. These are only $250,000, but this is the initial stage of developing projects. And they wanted to see how many companies were out there interested in doing it, and they expected to get 20 or 30 contract proposals. Instead, they got 125. And a lot of this is the same companies that are providing tugs and repair fueling services. Essentially, you've got a situation where this, because satellites are changing from big geosynchronous to many low-orbiting small satellites, the whole industry is now reshaping, and you're getting the cottage industries of companies are providing additional services to the satellite companies themselves. Satellite companies then build satellites on an assembly line basis, and then if they need engines from them to tug them about, if they need to remove them, they get other companies to do that. And, you know, if they need a repair, they ask other companies to do it. And so this is only going to, you know, once again, we're only beginning here, and the competition with all these companies is going to bring, is going to change how space operations in orbit function, John.
There is also competition in private space stations. Bob writes up a new venture by Jed McCaleb, who is a billionaire. What's he up to, Bob?
This guy made his money in software and cryptocurrency. He's got billions. $2.5 billion, I think, is his assets right now. So he is putting together a company called VAST to build and develop a spinning space station to test the pros and cons of artificial gravity in space. And this is an issue that's been, where, you know, weightlessness is not necessarily a good thing for you. The human body, or for plant life, or any number of biology. And so he wants to actually get a space station up there that's going to test that and eventually maybe make money from it. His company's small. This is really early on. He's only got 20 employees, but almost all the main management is coming from either SpaceX or other of the more successful companies. So he's picking his people well. I should say that this space station now makes, as far as I can count, five different American private companies or individuals who are building their own independent space stations to launch before the end of this decade. So we're going to have a very busy activity in space with lots of competition. Same theme, John.
Bob, my memory is Disney did the first Man of the Moon cartoon. It was an illustration, and I was gripped by it. This must be the 1950s, maybe early 60s. I don't remember.
What you're remembering, John, I can tell you exactly what the deal is. I've written about this in Genesis. Influenced Jim Lovell, the astronaut. There was a series of magazine articles by a magazine called Collier's that were illustrated by a very famous space artist, one of the first in the 50s, named Chesley Bonestell. And what Disney did is it made the first animated documentaries about this, basing the visuals on Bonestell's art and those Collier articles. That's what you're remembering. And it influenced the future. Jim Lovell told me so. Question. He got into space because of those Collier's articles.
But
I got into space because of the Disney movies. You know,
what is particularly vivid in my mind is the spinning space station for artificial gravity. Why was that not followed through by NASA? So many of those dreams were.
A spinning space station like this is engineering is a difficult engineering problem, John. The first thing is to build one that gets you can build. You have to first build a space station that you know how people can live on, and that's a difficult task engineering wise. To add a spinning component to it is even more difficult. And in fact, there were early experiments by both the Soviets and NASA to try to see if they can put a spin on a spacecraft and duplicate gravity. This is just like a capsule. Spin the capsule or add a tether to a capsule and have it spin with another vehicle. And those tests were not found to work, mostly because the engineering was too complicated. That's why it hasn't happened up to now. You build five different space stations from competing private companies, though, someone's going to try it. And the innovation is going to accelerate it and make it possible, John.
I remind that the last time you spoke, or we spoke recently, of a gravity experiment with a mouse. Wasn't it a mouse at ISS for 1G? And you asked...
Flies.
That's right. It wasn't a mouse.
They were doing tests with flies.
Right,
yes.
And you asked, why aren't we doing more of this testing? Because offsetting the weightlessness is a major challenge to deep space travel for human beings.
That's right. If this space station goes, they're very clearly going to have the opportunity to test a wide range of gravity amounts. It might be that just 1% gravity is enough to counter all the medical problems, and that's easy. That's an easy engineering problem. You don't have to do 1G, but we don't know that yet. We need to test to find out.
Commercial space, Astrobotic and Masten. Who are they, Bob?
Masten was a company that's been around for about two decades, and it mostly was doing vertical takeoff and landing of rockets, but all suborbital, small suborbital rockets. It was very successful. It did a lot of these up and down tests, and a lot of it was engineering tests for NASA. But unfortunately, they went bankrupt recently. They could not get the investment capital to grow, to get bigger. Astrobotic is a company that is trying to build lunar landers for both commercial and NASA, commercial entities in NASA. And they already have contracts with NASA to bring NASA instruments to the moon, plus all the private payloads. Well, when Masten went bankrupt, Astrobotic offered to buy its assets, including its workforce and CEO. And, of course, the bankruptcy court approved. And so Astrobotic has basically taken over Masten. And this is a great deal for both, because the people who work for Masten are not put out on the street. Their assets are not lost. And they're picked up by a company that needs it, precisely needs it, because they want to land on the moon. And so that's a good deal, John, and it means we move forward. That increases Astrobotic's chances to get on the moon with a private lunar lander.
Morpheus, building little engines for satellites. To do what, Bob?
Well, this is a company that didn't get into my list in the essay that I wrote yesterday, but this is a new company. It's a German company, Morpheus, and what they've been specializing is in building very small rocket engines. I mean, we're really talking tiny rocket engines for CubeSats. These would be electric thrust. They're really like ion engines, and they're designed for CubeSats, and they've been building them and selling them to CubeSat makers. So satellite makers don't have to build the engines themselves. They buy it from Morpheus. Well, Morpheus wants to expand this engine, satellite engine, business, and they've raised another $28 million in private investment capital so that they can do this. I should point out that it appears to me in Europe, Germany is in many ways ahead of the other, its other four partners in the European Space Agency in getting private enterprise going. They've got three different small sat rocket companies trying to raising money and building rockets, and now they've got an engine company for small sats who's raised money, and so they're in the move, John.
And these small companies, they're springing up everywhere, Bob. You're keeping track of them. But now we go to a big company that you're also keeping track of that's disappointed me. Blue Origin, the BE-4 rocket engine. What do we know?
More delays, that's what we know. Surprise, surprise. This is getting to be like SOS, isn't it, John? Over years, how many times did I report delays on SOS? We could have just played that report over and over again, taped it once. Well, it's the same thing with the BE-4 engine. BE-4 engine is the rocket engine that Blue Origin is making for both its New Glenn orbital rocket and ULA's Vulcan orbital rocket, new rocket. And unfortunately, it's like two to three years behind schedule. And they are supposedly going to deliver two flight-worthy engines to ULA this summer. They haven't yet delivered them. The flight engines were delivered to Blue Origin's static fire testing facility. And lo and behold, one of those engines immediately had problems. So they ship it back to the manufacturing facility to fix it. And so they might deliver one flight-worthy engine to ULA in a matter of weeks, but the second engine is probably not going to arrive at best until October, which means the Vulcan probably cannot launch until next year at the very, very earliest. It also means that the New Glenn rocket can't launch till next year in the earliest. This story to me is more significant, John, because to supply both ULA's Vulcan and New Glenn's and Blue Origin's New Glenn, they got to produce just for the scheduled flights in the next year something like 32 BE-4 engines. And right now there does not appear to be any thought at Blue Origin in developing a assembly line for producing these engines quickly. They're having enough trouble just delivering their first two. I don't see how they can produce an assembly line of these based on the situation right now.
Is there any whispering about what is delaying this, Bob? Any talk about the component? Do they need people? Have they got a bad concept?
It appears that the management at Blue Origin has been not double plus ungood since around 17. A lot of people have left, and there have been a lot of rumors about a lot of complaints about the management there. And for the BE-4 engine, for example, they cut back on money budget for building engines. So they couldn't do testing because they didn't have enough engines to test. You know, if you're testing a new engine, you might destroy it. Well, that's okay. You destroy it, but you figure out what went wrong. But if you don't budget any money to test, to build new engines, you can't test, you can't figure the problems out, and that's where they are, essentially. It also appears that this management did not think in terms of manufacturing, and Elon Musk has talked about this at length. The design of a new idea is not the big difficulty. The big difficulty is developing a manufacturing process that makes it efficient to build the new design. And Blue Origin, appears, has only been thinking about designing something and not the manufacturing end, and that's why they're struggling now to make the product for ULA and themselves.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Beyond the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.